All right, man, we are live. It is the official preview show. Errol Spence Jr., your Dennis Ugas from Jerry's World. Not our favorite place. Hey, listen, you know, it is what it is. But for boxing, at least for, you know, boxing in its own, you know, Jerry's World has become kind of, you know, a destination for the likes of who we're going to see this weekend, man. Errol Spence Jr., your Dennis Ugas for 3/4 of the welterweight titles up for grabs. There's an undercard fight. Isaac Cruz, Yorkies Gamboa. Gamboa manages to find his way into fights, man. So, I mean, I gotta, you know, salute him on that. But before we get to that, and I'll send this over to you, Train. We had a very eventful last weekend.
No doubt. Yeah.
Very eventful last week, and we had fights on Showtime and DAZN. One starting, and I guess I'll let you take this away. Starting at the wee hours of cards starting at 5 a.m. The main event, obviously, is when we're talking about.
Well, I was all about the YMCA senior discount. Friday morning runs. I forgot all about that.
Yo, man, I'm on the way to the gym. You hit me up like, yo, boom, boom, boom. I was like, hey, I forgot about this. But yeah, man. So we saw Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, at 40 years old now, stepping in against Ryota Murata, who was the WBA super champion at middleweight. And, let me know what you thought. You know, everybody, you know, we all know the results, but like, what did you think of the fight itself?
I mean, I think that what we all been speculating is that, you know, Father Time and Mother Nature has caught up with Triple G. You know, he's never been a defensive fighter. You know, he's just been a guy, always been a guy that, you know, put out a high octane offense. You know, his onslaught, walk you down, I'm going to eat 5 shots to get my 2 shots off. You know, mixed power in both hands, you know, to fight. He was a guy never really fought to go 12 rounds, but over as time went on and his career started to kind of like take level off, he started going 12 more. You know, the Daniel Jacobs was kind of the start of that fight. It might have been a fight before that I can't remember. He knocked Lemieux out, right? He knocked him out.
But you know what? The fight that kind of showed us that Triple G, there might be some human in there, was the Kell Brook fight.
Okay. Yeah, because my timeline is off on like these.
Events.
I forgot all about the Kell Brook fight.
Right.
But so, yeah. So anyway, so here we are, 2022. There's a subplot to all this because he's promised a third fight with Canelo if he got past Murata. And, you know, you and I were saying, well, what if he doesn't look as spectacular? Do they still make this fight? Well, you know, he was getting hit with everything but the kitchen sink from Murata. And this is a guy 5, 6, 7 years ago, Triple G would have made lunch out of real quick. You know, no disrespect to Murata, but, you know, the fight goes a totally different way a few years ago, but he is 40 years old, but he was losing that fight, you know, up in, I must probably say a round or two before the stoppage. I thought Murata was first, you know, he was beating to the punch. Triple G didn't really have an answer, you know, how to, you know, combat the onslaught from Murata. But as time went on, like most of these guys, you know, we always talk about the levels, you know, of this thing, even though Triple G at 40 years old, a shell of himself is still better than a Murata, who was really like a, just kind of like a layup drill type of fight before the Canelo situation. But he looked old. He looked his age. I mean, like I said, he got the victory, got the knockout. You know, Murata was, quote Spence early, I'm eating, I'm going to get it. You know, and that's basically how the fight went. And yeah, what's going to happen from here? I don't know. I guess they still going to make it. I think Triple G probably still has a fan base out there that warrants this rematch. So I don't know, you know, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I guess it was like part of the, you know, both guys have dress rehearsals, right? And look, you can argue one guy may have a harder fight than the other going into the fight. But right. Then there's also the side of, like you made a point of, like Triple G look old, man. Like, I don't think there's any, even with him stopping Murata, which, mind you, looked, I don't want to say like premature, but the way he was stopped, I was like, okay, you know, but there were points in the fight where Murata hit Triple G with some body shots and Triple G visibly didn't like it. And he just looked, I mean, even in the face before the lead up, he just looks like a weathered fighter. He looks like he's aged, like, before our eyes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you could say that physically from, like, the his face, but also in the ring. And I – now, look, to be fair, we still got to see Canelo and Bivol.
Right.
Because I'll tell you this. The only way to me this fight has any saving grace to where – even the most hardcore fans and people who cover the sport, who we at least right now we have a notion of what we think is going to happen in this fight. Like if it happened right now, the only way I see where that fight going in, even us, will be like, damn, is if Canelo doesn't look himself against Bivol or takes punishment. And you know, that I see a tough time with both of those things happening.
Right.
So again, like what do a lot of us expect going into this third fight? It's now I'll ask you this, and somebody brought up like I had brought up this point from somebody who brought it up to me. We've seen trilogies before.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the trilogies we bring up a lot of times, or we've brought up in this for this particular fight is the way Pacquiao Morales went down.
Right.
Where you saw Morales beat Pacquiao. Now granted, Canelo on paper has a draw with Triple G, but we all know
what happened. What you're saying. I got you.
The second fight, now while granted Canelo didn't knock Triple G out, Canelo was the one that almost was walking Triple G down.
Yeah, he carried the fight, basically.
Right. So then you start to wonder, okay, are we going to get a Pacquiao Morales 3 kind of situation going into September? And then somebody else kind of threw this curveball at me, and they're like, yeah, well, what if Triple G, even at this age, when he gets in there with Canelo, it's kind of the same kind of thing. And then this guy brought up the whole point of Marquez, and he goes, do you remember going into the third Pacquiao fight where Marquez was and where Pacquiao was?
Right.
And I'm like, never really thought about that. And funny enough, before the knockout in the fourth fight,
Okay. You
could argue Marquez clearly beat Pacquiao in that fight
more
than in any of the previous ones.
Right.
And so I guess it really comes down to which is the most likely in this scenario? You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, it's like I said. If I mean, those are great like examples of kind of like
what? Yeah, they're not exactly the same,
right? I understand you're trying to stretching to make a point, you know, and it's like you're playing devil's advocate, and
yeah.
But at the same time, like you said, the variables just. It's apples and watermelons, you know. It's you got one younger guy who's in a prom of his career, he's in a prom of his career, and the other guy is basically cashing out. Let's face it, you know. Outside of a shot that Canelo knows, and he's moving up in weight. You know, I don't know how much of a factor that's going to play. It's a guy that fought at 160 his whole life.
Yeah.
Now he's the smaller guy. You know, crazy is that. Who would have thought we'd be saying that?
Here's an interesting thing, though. When's the last time you saw a fight? Now, granted, Canelo is the super middleweight undisputed champion, but he's fighting up a weight class in his next fight. When was the last time we saw like a quasi big fight where one guy was technically stepping down and one guy stepping up to fight? I mean, granted, again, Canelo is the super middleweight champion.
Right.
But it's interesting that they're both like meeting at a weight technically for this fight to be made, because I made the point, even with Triple G coming off of how he looked against Murata, man, if you gave me the choice of who I'd rather see him in the ring with, it'd be Jermall Charlo, man. I'm sorry. Right. Only because it we already know, like a lot of us know what we're getting with the Canelo fight. And with the Charlo fight, it would be for all, well, three-fourths of the belts. And like, honestly, I mean, like that fight to me, I mean, Charlo should win that fight. You know, but
so to answer your question, the first part about when was the last time a fighter moved up from 160 to 168 to meet again, you know what fight I think that happened with? I'm not 100% sure. Jermaine Teller and Kelly Pavlik. Because I remember Kelly Pavlik saying after, I forget what fight, because I think he took a tune-up, if I'm not a tune-up, but he fought somebody else in between before he fought Jermaine Teller. And they said, no, matter of fact, it was, because I was at that, I went to that fight, but I didn't hear the press conference until like later, you know, the post-fight interview rather.
Yeah.
So he said in the ring, he said, well, they said Jermaine Teller is moving up to 168 pounds. And he said, okay, you know what, I can just eat more pasta then, and I can move up to make the weight. Because it was a rematch. I forgot
where they fought. Like,
yeah, we'll have to look that up because I'm almost positive. Because remember, Jermaine Teller ended up fighting that super middleweight. Remember before Carl Froch and got knocked out?
He was in the yeah.
Was he in that Super Six tournament?
I think in the beginning, right?
Beginning, I can't remember.
He got knocked out in the 12th by Carl Froch.
Right. He had a short. He wasn't even in the credits. He was in there so short, like
the key grip.
Yeah, he was done after that. After that first fight, like.
Yeah.
But listen, man, I see people, Triple G still got a following out there, you know, like it's not a loud following, but it exists, you know. So that's why I think they're still trying to get this fight off. I mean, I gotta give you your props. You was one of the few people that always thought we would come back here one day, because you just said the star power just don't exist.
I didn't think it would I thought at some point it would happen, not this late at this point. Like I thought like a year and a half ago, they were like, all right, let's do it.
Right.
But listen, crazier things have happened, but we still got next month, you know, we'll talk about that. Like,
yeah, weeks. So that's
but, another return, that of Ryan Garcia as, who did he fight? It was a Jacob Tagbo.
Tabo.
Again, man, like this was another dress rehearsal, not for him to get into another fight, but he's another one of these young kids that has, like, you know, we mentioned a lot, the big social media following. You even brought up the point that there's people who don't even know that he fights.
I'm telling you, people that don't know that he fights. That's crazy. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, man. It is. And new trainer, Joe Goosen. We all know Joe Goosen.
It's funny because I guess because he hasn't technically been in the limelight in quite some time. So I saw, you know, you just read the comments and be like, Ryan Garcia's trainer is trying to steal his thunder. And I'm like, they don't know that this has always been. This guy comes from a boxing, you know, royalty family. They don't know
his history. And all you got to do is just fight, look.
This guy been in, he just coached Michael Nunn, for crying out loud. You know, so this guy's been around for a long time. Like, younger people, they just think he's just some old guy he went and grabbed out of a bar. Like,
I know. That's the crazy part. It's just like, I think a lot of us were just, it kind of came out of nowhere. But I mean, all of us, even if you don't go that far back to Michael Nunn, I mean, you could go far, you could go back. To and, Chico Corrales and Castillo, when he told him, he's like, you got to show me something now.
You know, that was probably the biggest moment of his profession that night, you know.
Yeah, man. So
that was funny as hell when he said that. It was, yeah. With the Hawaiian shirts on.
Yeah. Yo, right? Hopping in the ring. But yeah, man, so we got to see Ryan Garcia. And again, man, just there's still question marks. You know what I'm saying? And look, is the kid fast? Yeah. You know, does he got like a mean little left hook when he's able to land it? Yeah. There's just things he does sometimes that even in this fight that I'm just thinking when you get in there with a seasoned pro, or not even seasoned pro, but just somebody who's going to be able to time you and see that you're just up here like that.
We've seen it with Luke Campbell. I mean, he got the knockout, but we've seen it already, what it looks like.
Yeah, and
and Luke Campbell was like here, like you were saying, and then it goes here, and then it goes here, but you can't get away with that type of stuff. You know, when you start, you know, Gary Russell, I know he was being tongue-in-cheek, but he was like, he watched the fight, and he was like, he still got his chin in the sky, you know, but it's true, though.
It's
In his business, you have to, speaking of Jermaine Tuller, you know, so he got knocked out with his head up looking at the lights.
Yep. I mean, yeah, I mean, were you at the Pavlik fight?
Yeah, we was there. Sleep called it because he said he's backing up, got his head on a straight line. He's going to get knocked out. And it happened.
Yeah, man. We called it. Me and my man, shout out to my man, Rob. We called that fight like before. We saw it. And it wasn't because Pavlik was this all great fighter.
Right.
Styles make fights. And
timing, big puncher, flaw.
Jab.
Yeah. Jermaine was the more talented guy, technically, you know.
More athletic.
I'm going to say he was more athletic. Let's say that. You know, I wasn't a big fan of his skill set either. But
And this, you know, and Ryan Garcia, man, like he's, you know, he shows the, you know, doing all this stuff. But it just, I'm just still wondering what's going to happen when he gets in there with somebody who's going to.
I ain't even going to like be diplomatic and try to. Gervonta knocks him flat out. Like flat out. Shakur jabs his head off. Devin Haney, the only one he got a shot at, and that's only because he's chinny, is Devin Haney. Devin Haney would outbox him, but it will always be a possibility for, you know, an overhand or. Something Haney don't, because Haney gets comfortable, he gets a little stationary in the pocket. You know, we're going to talk about Ugas in a second with that. And guys that get comfortable and stationary and they're not, you know, elusive defensively in the pocket, they're vulnerable, you know? So,
yeah.
Out of place you want to be, you know, against a puncher. But it is what it is, man. Look, I think with this kid, he needs a big fight. I think Oscar's not stupid. Just like winning, these guys, you can say what you want about them, but they know the game, they know boxing. And he knows what this kid is a overhand right away from being back to selling skincare products. So he's basically looking to cash out on this kid while he's still coherent up here and that the buzz is there. He's looking for – you never heard a promoter just like – he's like, look, I'll do a three-fight deal. Now, a lot of it's just talk, but he wants it sooner than later.
Yeah.
While this kid is still reachable because he don't want another Victor Ortiz situation on his hands.
And it's funny you mention him, man, because it's they're not exactly the same person, but they both had their issues.
It's some similarities there, you know.
And the thing, you know, and the crazy thing is like I feel sometimes Oscar's trying to find his own heir apparent, you know.
Right.
The thing about Oscar was the context was already there from the beginning. He was a very skilled dude. Young fighter, he had the look like Ryan Garcia does and everything, but the context was there.
He could fight though, like
he could fight. I mean? That's what I'm saying. He could fight,
and he could box,
and he did things that you're like, okay, like how we all pick it up like early on. We're like, this kid's special,
right?
This kid's special. With Ryan Garcia, there's stuff I see that I still think he. I feel he's going to be like Amir Khan 2.0, where
that's a great, great
really fast, but
yeah,
Because him getting dropped
kind of an amateur style a little bit. Not as much as Khan, but
you can't. I mean, and Gary Russell's right, and we've said it too, is at this level, man, you can't keep your chin up into the clouds, man. You can't.
First thing first, man, you're messing with the worst. Gotta protect your neck in this game.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So I don't foresee him getting in there. I mean, and here's the crazy part. We mentioned this. Let's say Gervonta beats Rolly, right? And by some grace of boxing,
Can you imagine if that happened?
And imagine, like, yo, we're going to do a false spectacular Ryan Garcia and Gervonta Davis. That would be the biggest non-title fight that they can make stateside.
In a long time.
But
it probably do better numbers than Spence and Crawford. Crazy as that sound.
How crazy would that be, man?
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. There's a lot of stories that were unwinding today that have to do, like, I even hit you earlier about this, but just something I read before we got on that I was just like, oh, another speed bump, but let's see. The last fight too, man, we saw on Showtime, a fight we knew I didn't think was going to end in the decision. Whatever way it went. What's his first name? Fundura.
Sebastian.
Is it Jason Fundura?
Is it Sebastian?
Jason. I forget his first name. And Erickson Lubin.
The Towering Inferno, whatever they call him.
Yeah. Wow. Like.
Yeah. Wow.
We
told people, I remember I put a post up and I said, y'all sleeping on this. And people was like, even shout out to Chris who knows his boxing.
Yeah.
And Chris was like, he kind of got exposed the last couple fights. And I was saying to myself, like, yeah, that's true. But you know how the game goes. Sometimes you fight down in your competition.
Yeah.
The punch output, the chin what he showed in these fights, like it's, And with the shortcomings that Lubin had, you and I said, well, this is two trains colliding that could make a good fight because of both of the guys, what they bring to the table. But everybody I thought was thinking this. I remember when you first told me about him. He was like, yo, because I wasn't watching a fight. It was a fight that was on. He was like, are you watching the fight? Might have been a basketball game on at the same time. And it was the undercard. He was like, it's like a 6-5. So I was already intrigued by that, 6'5". He's like, this is crazy. Because he looks like one of those dudes from like one of them horror circus movies. Like I used to watch this show, Carnival. House of
a Thousand Corpses, man.
Shout out to Ron Dobby. Yeah,
he looks like Tiny. Shout out to the horror fans out there. If you guys know what I'm talking about, but that's what he looks. He looks creepy. Just how big he is, man.
He's skinny and tall and long, so he looks creepy.
Yeah.
No, not in the face, but just his stature.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, so go ahead. You know, I just was saying that people slept on this.
I mean, it was an action-packed fight, man. I mean, it looked like Lubin early on was landing shots, and you saw, like, between both him and Fundora, Lubin just looks like the better polished guy, right? Right. But the thing is, because this dude Fundora is so tall, he's sitting there and he throws an uppercut, like a pretty well timed uppercut. But the fact of the point that Lubin was up to here on him, and he would just went like this, and he was like up here on him, like and from that point, it really changed the trajectory of the fight until, you know. Lubin turned it on. Credit to him, man. Like he fought hard, you know.
He fought.
He managed to drop Fundora, but Fundora just some people were calling him like a poor man's Paul Williams, right?
Right. That was the saying out there.
Yeah.
I said more so Margarito, but people going with the Paul Williams thing.
Listen, man, and then you know, Fundora get the corner stops, Lubin's corner stopped the fight, but you know, people argue, oh, you know, should have been stopped, but like when you look at Lubin's face, it's just, it was hard for me to like complain about the stoppage, only because when he got after Fundora got dropped, like that following round, he turned it back on, and then Lubin just didn't like he. I mean, nobody likes getting hit, but right. you could tell the temperament started to really change, and you see his face, and then like I was like, all right,
he looked defeated. He looked defeated.
He did. Yeah.
He got the knockout. Now the knockout came. And you know, shout out to Lubin, but the knockout, he just threw a punch and Fundora walked into it. It was a great time punch.
Yeah.
But Fundora just walked, because he got caught, what we always say, admiring his work.
Yep.
And you know, you got a wounded animal. You don't play, you know, like Rada Dahl always say, you don't play with your food. And yep. You know, he was playing with his food and it was still alive and it attacked him. And to his credit though, he didn't rush to get up. Like Lubin rushed to get up, and he got dropped. That we see so many times with fighters. But the one thing, you know, one of the reasons, and I just want to just, and like I said, Lubin fought his heart out, you know, and it was no quitting. But you know, the flaws is still there with him. And one of my issues with him is that he fights in a rush. You know, we saw when he fought Jermell, and I know people was like, oh, it happened so quick. But yeah, I noticed it's a trend with him. He tried to get everything back in seconds. And if you don't believe me, listen to Kevin Cunningham. And one thing he kept telling him, stretch the rounds, basically telling him like, stop trying to win the fight in the first second of the round.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
Use your angles, use movement. The blind side of him, it was wide open. You know, the straight left hand was like a money shot. Lubin strayed away from it, mm-hmm. Tried to fight a style that he's not really capable. Look, he has no knockouts past, I think, the sixth round, they said.
Yeah.
Now, this is a power puncher. Like most power puncher guys, they tape raw. And I was saying, like, he can't fight at this pace. Now, I'm not saying he's supposed to turn into, you know, Mayweather or James Toney, but at the same time, you can't sit in the pocket with a 6'5 dude who got the stamina and the onslaught that this, you're not winning that battle. And that's basically pretty much how he lost the fight. Zay, he tried to fight in the pocket, and then when he got tired, he went on the ropes, a la Chris Colbert, and you know, and got teed off on. You know, he used so much energy early trying to fight at a pace that he just couldn't fight at. You know, and he got chin issues. And I said that, and people was like, "Oh, how can you say he got chin issues?" Because he got knocked out by Charlo, who's a strong fighter, but we saw him rocked by a lesser puncher guy. You know, so. The writing on the wall is there. It's not mean he's a bad fighter. It's just that he's a guy that's very impatient. And impatient guys normally get knocked out. They normally get stopped, you know, because it's almost like a style that I'm not trying to go to 12 rounds, you know, and I'm going to fight you and I'm going to break you down and knock you out. I have no intentions on fighting for 12 rounds, you know, not that I'm saying that's the case, but, you know, that's normally, you know, the perspective. The perception that's out there when a guy fights like that in a hurry.
No, I agree. Like, and that, unfortunately, for Lubin, man, I mean, you know, people are quick to say how he should retire and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. He's still young, 26, but it's two brutal losses.
It's a brutal loss, man. Like, it's absolutely a brutal loss. And listen, man, for Fundora, My issue with him, I mean, the thing is, you know, it's like, I like the kid, you know what I'm saying?
He's got
like
boxing.
A good attitude.
Yeah, he's good for boxing. Yeah. Good.
I'm just, there's a ceiling, you know what I'm saying? And I think when he gets in there with somebody like a Boots, if he's going to move up, even Jermell or one of these guys, I just think when he gets in there with somebody that's going to be fast and have that much more pop, it's going to be a problem. Because
agreed.
He just doesn't have...
Agreed. Jermell Charlo knocks him out. And I know people got the issues with them when it comes to power and athleticism, like and them that dangerous. Right. You can outbox him, no doubt about it. But
yeah, he, right.
Jermell, see, Jermell can with Charlo. I mean, excuse me, what Lubin wasn't able to do, Jermell Charlo can do. Because
right,
them guys never get tired. Neither one of them, you know. Yeah. So they may get outboxed, but their energy never tapers off. Like it just stays. It's what's one? Tony Harrison found that out. He was outblocked in Jermell.
Who, mind you, fought on the undercard and looked really good.
Oh,
you
know, yeah, like he looked good. He,
I mean, he's still going to be it. I mean, when you look at the 154 division, man, I mean,
he's still dangerous for a lot. He's a dangerous guy to fight.
I wouldn't be sure. I mean, I don't know if I'd do that. If I were from Doors people, I don't know if I'd put him in there with Tony.
No.
That's
no.
A bad
so
stuff.
He'd be, and he might not look the same, you know?
A little too much.
That's too much. That's why they're going right at the top of the food chain for Charlo, you know. So
yeah. But we'll see. I mean, the thing about him, he's an attraction.
I was going to say, they're probably going to build on that, what you said,
yeah,
before they even go there. You know, that way the fight is bigger when it happens, you know.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, I'm sure he'll be – I think probably his next thing should be, like, the undercard of, like, a major pay-per-view or something like
that. It's always an Angulo out there for him to look good against.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we are here.
Here we go.
Saturday.
Here we go.
Tomorrow, as we're making this video, tomorrow's the weigh-in.
Yeah, this will be on. I'm probably going to put up Steven probably like Saturday, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, man, look, this is a fight that I think we were expecting at some point. We just didn't think the course of events would lead to like where we're at today. And at least for this Saturday, man, we're going to have 3/4 of the welterweight titles unified. Errol Spence, your Dennis Ugas, Jerry's World. And yet again, this is the second time that Spence is coming off. We lost train real quick. This is the second time we've, you know, seen Spence come back from an injury. You know what I'm saying? And now going into, I think we got him back here. Hold on. There you go. All right, cool. So this is the second time we've seen Errol Spence come back from an injury that he's saying is fully recouped, you know, with an eye. He missed out on the Pacquiao fight. Ugas steps in. Solidifies himself as a WBA champion, but I don't recall a time where we've seen a fighter who was at the level of Errol Spence that's coming off of two injuries.
Never happened.
And going into now, like, I mean, I would argue this is a tougher fight than what he had going. No, it's no disrespect to Danny Garcia, but I think in two cases, I think this is a tougher fight, and I think there's more up for grabs, obviously, in this fight, man. But I'll just shoot it to you, man. I mean, like, give me the breakdown of this fight.
Wow. I mean, what can you say? You know, Errol Spence looking to be undisputed. You know, he's collecting belts, you know, before he vacates to move up north to 154. You know, like you said, Ugas, you know, got the WBA, right?
Yep.
Got the WBA strap. Ugas is a guy that most people felt like really technically never really lost. You know, the biggest fight that come to mind is his fight against Sean Porter, a fight that he really should have won. It was a knockdown, I believe, in the 10th or 11th round that wasn't counted, and that would have changed the scorecards. But, you know, he kept going and, you know, built his way back up and got the Pacquiao fight. Because Spence, like you said, had the retina issue, and Ugas was counted out in that fight. Prevail over. Now, we can argue if Pacquiao was 43 and it showed up, or one can say that Pacquiao always had trouble with boxers. I guess we'll never really know that. But what we do know is that he's fighting Errol Spence on Saturday night, and despite the eye injury and a car accident, Errol Spence is still the favorite going into this fight Saturday. So we got to kind of throw all that out the window, although it's still up on the table, and you and I will touch on that in a second. But far as skill goes, mano a mano, Earl Spence is to be a guy that sometimes get undersold, you know, by boxing people. I'm not talking about casual fans. I think that sometimes he gets lumped in as this guy that just follow people around. And, you know, you and I, you know, we're historians when it comes to the sport. You know, we always like to defer to old fighters. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of Marvin Hagler lately. And I don't know why, like, but I just got this premonition that if they do fight Bud and Earl Spence, I think the fight's going to play out similar to Ray Leonard and Hagler. But one thing I learned about Hagler, like, not that I didn't know about Hagler, but you know how you go back and with a fine tooth comb and notice different things, that he was a lot more athletic than what he got credit for. And he was a lot better. He was a lot more of a better boxer than a guy that just mauled you and just beat you up in the pocket. You know, he threw a sweeping right hand. You know, he used to leave his feet, displaying athleticism. And Earl Spence actually showed some of that against Danny Garcia. Now, granted, two different, totally different styles, but Earl Spence, when he fought Mikey Garcia, and I don't know, it was a smaller guy, and everybody was like, oh, well, he didn't knock Mikey Garcia out. Like, yeah, I thought he displayed another wrinkle to the arsenal. He outboxed him. And this was a guy that was known for being a bigger guy, a guy that mauls you and just kind of walk you down and wear you out, because we saw Earl be outboxed by Kell Brook, who he eventually ended up stopping. But the thing about Earl Spence, what he don't get credit for is the little sneaky stuff that he do. And I wish Ruben was on here tonight, because he made a great point about Earl Spence. It doesn't look flashy, the things that he does. You know, it's really simple. It's real simplistic. And it's little things that you got to catch. Like, he throws a little sneaky right hand to the body. You know, he hook and sinks you with his jab. His jab is a different from a lot of other fighters' jabs, because his jab, like I said, it pulls you in and it control you like a, in basketball, they call it, you know, keeping the ball on the string, right?
Yeah.
A jab can be like that too. You know, you got all different types of jabs, right? So his jab is more so to control you. And the thing, while I brought up Hagler, to go back to that, one thing about Hagler, no matter how elusive and athletic you were, he was going to put his hands, you know, and this would wear fighters out. And people always say, well, he didn't knock this guy out. Well, Hagler didn't knock everybody out before, but what he did was he slowed your work rate down and he made you second guess a lot, because every time you threw a punch and you missed, he was going to punish you for it. And I think Earl Spence got, not that he's Hagler, but he has that trait in him. And I think that the naked eyes sometimes miss it and they just see simple stuff happening. And he, look, he's not a defensive guy, so he gets hit in the process. But when it comes to the war of attrition, he overprofels a lot. Mm-hmm. The thing about Ugas, where I think he's going to give Spence some trouble, is that he's freakishly built. He is a weird
physique. You noticed that, right? Yeah. Like, he's like, the fact that he's a welterweight, I was like, wow.
It's weird because he got this tall torso, these long arms, cut up all crazy. He looks like almost like a middleweight. So not that, you know, this isn't a genetic bodybuilding thing, but you know, he's a strong welterweight, and he stayed, but he's a lot more stationary. Here we go with this Cuban thing again, Roberto. I keep hearing that so is Luis Ortiz, and he doesn't fight like the Cuban school type guys. Like, he, don't get me wrong, he's technically sound, but he's another guy that's stationary, gets hit a lot. When I think of the Cuban style of recent, I go to two people, and there's more coming, obviously, two most successful. We know who they are. Laura and Arislandi Laura and Rigondeaux. Those are the two guys. Those guys avoided being hit. They literally hit, not be hit. Ugas, we saw, and I was looking right past it to you, and then one thing you texted me while you was watching the Pacquiao fight, you was like, look, Bud, we weren't even thinking about Spence at the time. We was like, Bud was capitalizing on a lot of these lanes and openings, you know, that's available, because Ugas will sit in the pocket, he drops his hands, he sticks his chin out, which can be dangerous, fighting a guy like Earl Spence. He gets a little sloppy, and he gets careless. And I just think that when you fight a guy like Earl Spence, if everything being on the up and up, if everything is still there, I just gotta go with the guy I think is the better inside fighter, the guy that has the better jab, the better the better body work. He's more craftier and got a little bit more, got more tricks, that being Ugas. And I do think he's going to get shots off, and it's going to probably take Spence a few rounds to figure some stuff out. But I think that the Jad, followed by the body work, I just think that it's going to be too much. I even think Ugas is going to get dropped in this fight. I don't know if it's going to be a stoppage, but I think that's going to be the difference in the fight, rather if it's a close fight or not. I think Spence is going to drop it and just wear him out late. And I just see Spence winning the fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ugas, you have to wonder if, like, they're if he's going in there thinking, like, he's not getting a 100% Errol Spence, you know. He's just going to go in there and just try to fight him in a way like how Sean Porter fought Errol Spence, you know, just try to be rough, just try to, you know. It's like on paper, man, like, you're right. Like, I think the Spence is the better inside fighter. He's got the better jab. He's the more experienced fighter here. A lot of our question marks is just, like, at this stage, what kind of Spence do we have? You know what I'm saying? And then we brought up, offline, we brought up, he's brought in a nutritionist now, because he made mention, like, weight was the biggest issue. And we all knew that. Shout out to
RV. It has to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And we looked at the media weigh-in, the media workouts and stuff, and it's so hard to pick up, like stuff. but what I did notice, and we talked about it, was and you had mentioned Ugas, like he doesn't look like a welterweight, but at one point Spence was like the boogeyman of the division, right? And he was like the bigger welterweight than everybody. But when I look at him, and I don't know if it's just, again, like you may mention of it, this is like a little poker or whatever, but there's just, like, I don't know going in. I'm going to say, I'm picking Spence to win this only because I like everything you just said. I think he's better in a lot of those departments. But a lot of us are just wondering what kind of Spence, after all he's been through at this point, what are we going to see Saturday night? But something tells me, man, that because I think Ugas is going to go in there and he's going to try to, like, fight in the phone booth, like he tends to do a lot of times, man, this is where Spence is going to take over. And, like, I just think the body shots, they're going to make Ugas potentially apprehensive, And from that point, he's not, like, he's not Rigondeaux. He's not Lara who were able to use their feet and evade a lot of stuff. But yeah, man, I like Spence in this fight. I mean, I just think all of us are wanting to see what kind of Spence we have at this point, because we don't want to disrespect Ugas.
No, yeah.
Because he's a deserving guy. I mean, like, there's a reason why we're all tuning in, but it's following this that has all of us, like, glued as to, who's going to come out of this. And a lot of us are looking at Spence. But listen, man, let's stop beating around the bush. Terrence Crawford is looming.
He's looming.
Now, one thing I wanted to bring up, I didn't talk about it.
I want to hear about this more than the fight on Saturday.
Well, I mean, so listen, Terrence Crawford, though he was signed to Top Rank, he had a management deal with this company called MTK Global. Okay. They manage other fighters and other athletes and stuff, but apparently the guy, I don't know if the guy that runs the company or is in charge is kind of involved in, like, a murder case. And something having to do with, like, the company being such, they interviewed Steven Espinosa, and he flat out said, he's like, listen, the Crawford fight's the next fight. I mean, that there's really no other. I mean, he brought up Keith Thurman, these guys, and Boots, but he's like, this is the fight. But he said the only hurdle at this point may be that. But something tells me, like, they'll probably get around that.
Okay.
I'm willing to bet it they will. But I think, man, you and I have been kind of seeing this for the better part of a year. We've been kind of seeing the stars somewhat align. And we've been needing things to happen. And I think one of the major hurdles was Crawford's involvement with Top Rank. Now, look, that's not for us to say that Top Rank is a terrible company. I got my opinion. We all got opinions.
You're right.
But I think for Crawford, he needed to get out of it. He just needed to get out of there. And I think it's because, like, he knew the fight he needed to get was right there. So it's been cryptically quiet. We've been seeing Crawford out in Puerto Rico and
all running up hills and training, running up mountains and with no opponent.
Right.
The GOAT, remember on NBA, what video game was that? Lakers versus one of the old Genesis games, one of the systems. Remember Jordan wasn't on the game, but you knew it was Jordan.
Yeah,
the Ghost player,
Remember that?
Some copyright deal, he couldn't be, whatever. So anyway, that he's the Ghost opponent he's training for.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I wanna hope he's gonna be at Jerry's World this Saturday. I think everybody involved kind of sees like what the next step is. And even Stephen Espinosa was saying, like, look, man, like, we want to do the fight. His whole thing was, he said, like, it's not Top Rank's not the issue. It's the fact that they have a relationship with another network that just makes things.
That's what I was
trying. Very difficult. And I get it. Like, look what they did with Mayweather Pacquiao, where they had to get two networks. But mind you, look at the money that fight.
I'm about to say, look what it took for that to happen. And just to circle back to the Devin Haney situation, that was the main – that's what Eddie Hearn was pretty much telling him. And look, props to him because, he let money walk out the door. He said, I can't get that deal done. I'm running my own network. I'm trying to get my own network. Before I can do any cross-promotion deals, I still got to cash in on
my joint, yeah.
Shout out to Andy Ruiz being on pay-per-view because I just gave Canelo all this money and, the bottom big bank take little bank. We back to that again. So, Devin Haney signed with Top Rank.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the Sugar Ray, we talked about Ray Leonard. He was doing that years ago, doing little 1-2 year deals with different promotion companies just so they could put up the money for the fight. But he was his own promoter. He was a free agent. He had his manager, but he didn't really have no promoter, which I didn't realize that until way later. So it's not like this hasn't been done before. It's just that now these fighters, it's a lot more, it's being done a lot more frequently than it was done in the past. You saw Boots got the 2-year TV deal, with Showtime, which is a TV deal, not a network deal. But to your point about Crawford, he signs a 2-fight deal with Showtime. Spence, maybe a rematch. And listen, this is no disrespect to Fool Guys. And like I put up a post early this week, I said people are lying. They're kidding themselves if they don't want this fight. And there's no, because I'm going to be honest with you, Crawford will, in my opinion, wash Fool Guys. It's funny how styles make fights. Where Crawford and Spence, it's a more entertaining fight. It's a lot of intrigue with that fight. But I just think that just like when you said earlier, styles make fights. Ugas is all wrong for Crawford, in my personal opinion. Like it's just even if he come up with the, because we could be having a discussion. I just think guys like Ugas, because he so stationary and Crawford is like all over the place. Like it would be like what we thought the Pacquiao fight was going to look like, but worse.
Yeah.
I know I'm jumping way ahead, but
that's to the point. That's to the point. But I mean, we'll see, man, this Saturday, yo. We'll be tuning in. They're talking about like 70,000 people that are going to be there. It says a lot, man. I mean, you gotta wonder what the fall is gonna look like.
Yeah, it's just it's a lot on the line.
Yeah,
it's a lot on the line. Did you want to run it back for the gram quick minute prediction?
Oh yeah, man. Listen, so I mean, a lot. I think this fight is going to be the story of Errol Spence. I mean, yet again, we got to see what you know. He recovered from the eye injury. Is he, you know, the weight cut's okay? Is he ready to go? Is he overlooking this fight, knowing that he's being questioned about Terrence Crawford, you know, every minute? But something tells me Errol Spence is going to show up for this fight. And I just think Ugas is going to come at him in a way, and he's going to try to make it a phone booth fight. And I just think that's going to be more in the line of what Errol Spence is going to, you know, take more advantage of. It. Like, to your point, I think the jab is going to be key. And, you know, I expect a good fight, though. This ain't going to be a whitewash. I expect a tough fight that I see Errol Spence coming out. And it's funny, you mentioned Hagler. I don't want to compare Hagler Mugabe necessarily. But as far as, because I don't see a stoppage here. But as far as how tough of a fight that was.
Right.
Whew. Could be, man. Like, yeah. I got Errol Spence winning this 115, 113. In a tough fight that kind of just cements that Errol Spence is back, so I'll say that.
Listen, Ugas did a lot to get here. He's a very crafty fighter. Like I said, we have to debunk this whole Cuban style. Like, he doesn't fight like Laura and Rigondeaux. You know, he's more of a stationary guy. He's crafty in the pocket, but he's in the pocket. And for my money, if I gotta go against a guy that's, you know, very comfortable in the pocket, who's good at punishing you off a miss and wearing you down with body shots and, you know, controlling you with that sink and pull jab that he has. I just think when it comes to the war attrition, you know, I got to go with Errol Spence. You know, I think that, you know, you talked about ceilings earlier, and I just think that ceiling of Ugas is about an 8-foot ceiling. Excuse me, I'll say a 12-foot ceiling. And Errol Spence ceiling is about, you know, 20 feet in the sky, maybe even higher. It's just a level that he can tap into that we probably still haven't seen yet. Because you really think about Errol Spence's career, you know, the Sean Porter fight was probably his biggest fight. Maybe you could say Kell Brook. But the Porter was, and I know that was a close fight, but again, the knockdown was the difference in the fight. And I think that the knockdown will be the difference. There probably will be a knockdown in this fight because Ugas, he gets careless and he gets reckless. He drops his hands. He sticks his chin out. And I just don't think that flies with this level of opponent. There's no disrespect to Ugas. Like I said, he earned a lot to get here. But I'm a big believer in levels. And I just think Errol Spence is on a different level than he is.
All right. Hey, man. We got this was two for Spence. I expect a good fight, man. I can't wait. Like we said earlier, Isaac Cruz against Yorkies Gamboa on the undercard. But, yeah, man, this is, like we said.
And they stay digging up Gamboa body for these young dudes. Like, speaking of Cuban fighters, sheesh.
Man, he was one of the first ones, man.
Ain't that crazy? Like, they was put the hype train behind him.
Yeah.
But, you know, you saw early on with him, and you saw him getting dropped and stuff, and it was just like, ugh.
Yeah,
real reckless style that he had. You just wonder how long that was gonna last.
Yeah, the one fight he missed out on,
Wama
was against Wama Lopez, which he would have blitzed out of here.
Can you imagine? That's crazy though. How that one event messed up another. Like, that probably messed up his whole career. His whole career would have been different.
But they should have done that fight like already by the time this dude got knocked out, you know, right. Like, now mind you, like, the weight classes were, I think they were, I don't know if Gamboa was up one or
yeah, it was definitely a weight difference. I remember that.
Slight, but you know, I mean, we'll see. But yeah, that's this Saturday.
Can't wait.
Jerry's World, you know, we'll be
only championship they'll ever see in Dallas is.
Hey, no, listen, man. Sorry for us Texas fans. Man. Look, we got the Philadelphia Eagles here, the Miami Dolphins here. You're not gonna get any sympathy from us as it concerns the Cowboys.
Hell no.
So we when it concerns the ring,
and listen, we're center attention. It's not the people from Dallas. It's the arrogant fans that live around, like, out of there. That's the crazy part. The
really? Shout out to all our fans in Texas, man.
They're not like that. Because I met, like, people actually real Cowboy fans, not the bandwagon ones that live all around the world, you know. So
right, like Yankee fans.
Yeah, yeah. It's all the same. Lakers, Yankees, and Cowboys.
Oh, yeah, man. So we'll be back next week. I mean, again, we got more fights in store. Shakur Stevenson, Oscar Valdez at the end of the month, followed by Canelo, Dimitri Bivol, followed by Gervonta Davis, Rolly Romero, followed by Devin Haney, George Kambosos, Devin Haney. So just a lot in store, man. But yeah, we'll be back next week talking about what culminated in this fight, man. So till next time, follow us at Guardrail Grove Boxing on Instagram, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. We're back, man. We're back on YouTube. So
we're gonna be busy.
Busy next few months.
Yeah.
So, right, hopefully after this weekend, we have more assurance of the fall.
We're gonna be popping bottles when that announcement
Ooh,
happens.
Man.
That's a celebration.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Ugas like, yeah, okay. Wait on it. Hold my glove.
He did that a couple weeks ago or last
year. It happened again. Yeah.
That's why we gotta watch the fights. So, any case, man, we are out.
Peace.